Okay, so let's start from Perek Zayin Pasuk Chaf. We're up to Bnei Ephraim. I have over your handout. And the handout has the Bnei Ephraim. So here we go, Pasuk of Bnei Ephraim Shusolach. The first one is Shusolach. Then comes Uvered Bino, Vesachas Bino, Ve'elodah Bino, Vesachas Bino. Farshim say that when you have a Vav before the name, now this is a rule which does not always work. And there are different opinions. But when there's a Vav before the name, that indicates that they're all children of the same person. When you have, just like, if the Pasuk would say, Bnei Ephraim, Shusolach, and then it would say, Bered Bino, Sachas Bino, Eladab Bino, Sachas Bino, without a Vav, that would mean each one is the son of the other. Like a list of generations. But when there's a Vav before the name of the person, because we had this so many times, I didn't really pay much attention to this, but when you do have a Vav, then the approach of some of the Farshim is to grow. You have to look at the Farshim clearly how everyone is a little bit different. Then each one is another child of that person. So here we have Ephraim has a whole number of children. Shusolach, Beret, Tachas, Eladot. Now, it's not really clear if they're really all of his children or are they his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren. I don't know. It's not clear. There are different opinions. At least the first three, at least Shusolach is his child. That's clear. I think in Pinchas, where one of the Pesuk in the Torah where they're Miyachis, the children of Ephraim, we have three. Shusolach, not Bered, but Becher, a Chof Resh, Becher, and Sachas. So some want to say that Bered is the same as Sachas. Is it? Is it not? Okay, all of these things in Devar Yom, we don't really know, but that's at least, right now I just wrote on the chart to make it very simple. I just took all these Pesukim, all these names, since the Vav that connects all the names, I just compiled one long list. Shusolach, Bered, Bino, Sachas Bino, Elodov Bino, Vesachas Bino, Vezoved Bino, Shuselach Bino, the Ezer, the Elod, all of these people are all the children, and Vaharogum, what happened to all of these children? So we have here a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, now we mentioned this before, what happened to these people? Vaharogum Anshe Gas. They were killed by the Anshe Gas, Hanolodim Ba'aretz. Now that simply means that the Anshe Gas were Nolodim Ba'aretz. They lived in their land. They had home advantage. They knew their territory. So Hanolodim Ba'aretz reference to the Anshe Gas. What?
So Goyim,
right. Goyim Anshe Gas is from the Pelishtim. They're one of the Pelishtim, the nations of the Pelishtim. And the question is, we learned the Rashi last week, that the question is, what exactly happened to these people? How exactly and when did they... Here's a handout. At what point do we have a minion yet? Do we have a minion yet? All right, we'll have some people from the minion. We'll get some people. People will come yet. Alright. So we have here all of these people, they are all children, and they were killed by the Anshe Gas. Let's go through the Pesukim a few, then we'll come back and we'll explain a little bit more. Okay, Ki Yardu Lakachas Es Miknehem, why were they killed? Because the Bnei Ephraim tried to conquer their land. And they were attacked. And when they were attacked, they were killed by the Anshe Gas. Pasuk of Beis, Vayisabel Ephraim Avihem Yamim Rabim. Ephraim mourned for them for many days. Vayavohu Echav Lenachamo, his brothers, seemingly all of the other Shvatim, came to console him. Now, if you learn the Pasuk on a very simple level, this took place when the Bnei Yisrael were living in Mitzrayim. They were in Mitzrayim, Ephraim had all these children, and most of them went and they decided to attack this nation called Gas. Seemingly it means they left Mitzrayim. How are they able to leave Mitzrayim? So we'll assume for the moment, here's the handout, we'll assume for the moment that Ephraim had permission, being that he was the son of Yosef, they had permission to leave the land. Unlike other residents of Mitzrayim were not allowed to exit Egypt, a slave never escaped from Egypt, but the children of Yosef had special rights. They wanted to conquer some territory in neighboring lands. Gaas appears to be, there was some land which was in the desert called Gaas. It's not likely this refers to Gaas in Eretz Yisrael, because they did not yet leave, they did not yet go and enter Eretz Yisrael until much later on, until 400 years later, until really 210 years later. So we'll leave out the Medrash for now for a moment. There was some type of nation living in the desert near Egypt called Gaas, and the Bnei Ephraim had privileges which allowed them to leave the country. They attempted to colonize this place called Gaas, and what happened was they were not successful, and they were killed. Okay. And then all of Ephraim's brothers came to give comfort to Ephraim on the loss of his children, but Vayavo Echav Lenachemo, and they tried to give him comfort. Pasach of Gimel, Vayavo Elishto. At that point in time, you see on the chart, Ephraim, he married another woman. I don't have the name of the woman we married, we don't know who it is. And he had a child, Vatahar Vatelibain. No.
It has to be before.
Ephraim is alive. Ephraim did not enter Mitzrayim. Ephraim, there's no record that Ephraim lived long enough to enter Mitzrayim. Absolutely not. None of the Shvatim went into Eretz Yisrael. None of the Shvatim were alive. 210 years later, everyone died in the desert. It's not so clear. You probably can find Midrashim which seem to indicate, which says that maybe Ephraim did live. Everyone died. But I don't know if everyone agrees. In the art school, they discussed, is it possible that Ephraim lived so long that he was part of the Yotzei? He certainly was not part of those who entered Eretz Yisrael. If he did leave Mitzrayim, he didn't make it to the 40 years in the desert. That is for sure. There's nothing to talk about, hands down. But did Ephraim live long enough that he left with Bnei Yisrael, Yitzias Mitzrayim? Not likely. Right? Very, very unlikely. Maybe you'll find some medrash that seems, that's the article talks it out.
But in the regular Shvatim, Ephraim and Menashe might have lived longer.
Right, Ephraim and Menashe, because
they were younger.
Yeah, but even there, it's hard, whatever. It's very hard to understand.
Maybe died last, but...
I don't know. It's not clear. But at this point in time, after the death of Ephraim's children, he married another woman, had a child called Beriah. Why did he name the son Beriah? To commemorate an event. What was the event? The event was Ra'ah, that his children died. This is a very common theme in ancient times. People named children after events. Today it's unheard of. People name children after people. And if there's no person to name it after, so then they'll look in the parasha and they'll give a name of a person. But you don't find people today, people do all these strange things, I can't say. But generally among us, it's not really acceptable to go take an event after 9/11, you're going to name a child after 9/11. It's not a good thing, it's not a good mazel, right? You're not going to go name a child after a hurricane Sandy. I'm going to name my heart child Sandy. Superstorm Sandy. We're going to name him Sandy. Shagas. What do you call him in Hebrew? How do you say Sandy in Hebrew? What are you going to call him in Hebrew? Sandy. What are you going to say? I don't know.
Alexander.
Sandy?
He was short for Alexander.
Sender.
Okay. Unheard of. But this is what Ephraim did. Ephraim's children died in this terrible battle, and he had another child subsequent to this horror, and he named him Beriah. And the Sheresh of Uriah is Ra, to commemorate the evil event that occurred in his lifetime.
Is this the only place we see up till now where they explain the name?
No, I think there are other places. I don't remember it clearly, but it's not unique. There are other places where children are named after events. I heard someone tell me... What do you have? What? Yisachar, I hired him. I paid for my husband.
I mean, it's after an event that happened.
But God, good mazel. In ancient times, someone told me. I was talking to someone recently on Sunday. He told me that he knows a person, and the child was born during Parshas Tetzaveh. and he wanted to name the, maybe it was a girl, the girl Zahava. Why? After the Mizbeach HaZohav. not after a person, a relative, or because it's a nice name. It's the Parsha of Mizbeach HaZohav. I want to name it Zahava. So he went to someone. He went to a Hasidic Rebbe, and he wiped the floor with him. He says, "You're out of your mind. You name a child after the Mizbeach HaZohav, because in the parasha, you name it after a person. Find a name. If you want to name it Zahava, because you like the name Zahava, after, but don't tell me you're naming it because of the Mizbeach HaZohav. That's not a derech, a mahalach that is acceptable in today's times. All right, to each his own.
He has a golden retriever named the dog.
What?
A golden retriever.
A dog.
A dog.
A golden retriever. Okay. By Yigreshmo, Briyakiv, or all Haisa Vesa.
Call your wife.
Okay, let's go to Pasik Chavdal, Pasik Vito Sheera. Then Ephraim had a daughter. From his daughter came Yehoshua ben Nun. This is not everyone knows this. Many people know that Yehoshua ben Nun came from Ephraim, but they do not know that Yehoshua ben Nun came from Ephraim's daughter, not his sons. Uvito She'era. We don't know who the mother was. Vativen, she was a very powerful woman. She was an entrepreneur. She built cities. Vativen, she built. Can you imagine such a thing? Talk about women's rights and power of women. Vativen, she built its base Choron, Hatachton, the Esuel Yon. She built this city called Choron, the lower and the upper. The Ace Uzain She'era, and the city Uzain She'era, similarly She'era, she named it after herself. Like you have in Chumash, different cities were named after people. Wow. Here as well, she named the city after her own name. Then she had children. Now here we are, I'm applying the same principle. Whenever there's a vav before the person's name, that means they are all children of that person. And when there is no vav, that means it's a child of. So Patsach Hafei V'Refach Bino, she had a child called Refach, V'Reshef, V'Selach Bino, V'Sachan Bino. Okay, on a very simple level, it could be I'm wrong, the other opinions. Just generally, there were four people here mentioned: Refach, Reshef, Telach, and Sachan. Pasuk La Chavav. Then La Adon. Notice there is no Vav. When there is no Vav before the name, that indicates that this person is a child of the previous person. La Adon Bino, Am Yehud Bino, Elishama Bino. Chavzai Non Bino, everyone knows of Nin, Yeshua Bin Nun, shouldn't say Nin Nun, Yeshua Bin Nun. And here he's called Non. Okay, so that's an interesting point. Yehoshua ben Nun. Here is known. Known Bino, Yehoshua Bino. So this is Yehoshua ben, the son of Nun, but here he's known as Known. Pasuk Chavches, Vahuzasam. Where did Ephraim live in Eretz Yisrael when they eventually made Aliyah, when they left Mitzrayim? Vahuzasam, Umoshevosam, their dwelling place and their living place. These two words seemingly are the same, have the same meaning. It's not clear the difference of expression. Mitzuda says almost the same thing. They lived in Beis El Uvenoseha. Now I'm not exactly sure, explains that these are the boundaries of their land in Eretz Yisrael. So when it says Beis El, that's in the south. In the south, Vela Mizrach in the east was Na'aron, Vela Ma'arav in the west was Gezer, Uvenosech and its suburbs, Ushechem Uvenosech, and in the north we have Shechem and its suburbs, Ad Ayah, until the region called Ayah Uvenosech and its suburbs. This is where Ephraim lived in Eretz Yisrael. Now Ephraim lived, settled near Menashe. Okay, Ephraim's brother was Menashe, the Al Yidei Vinei Menashe. They lived adjacent to Menashe. And where did Menashe live? Menashe's territory included Beis She'on, I have it on the chart on the right side, Uvenosecha, Tanach Uvenosecha, Megidoi Uvenosecha in its suburbs, and Dor, it's the name of a place, Uvenosecha, Be'ela Yeshu, in these locations that we mentioned for Ephraim and Menashe, both Ephraim and Menashe are children of Yosef. Yosef's children were Ephraim and Menashe. Be'ela, and that's what we learned yesterday. Yesterday we discussed a great length Menashe, the charts from Menashe. Be'ela, in these two locations, Yoshu ben Yosef ben Yisrael. So we have here the Yichus of Ephraim and the location of where they lived in Eretz Yisrael. Now it's very interesting. We learned the Rashi, not going to go through it again, is that this story is totally missing from the Torah. There's no mention of the Torah about what happened in Ephraim. Simi, if you take the Pesukim on a very simple level, Ephraim, when he was in Egypt, had children, a whole long list of children. There's repetition, obviously. Shusolach, repeated twice. Sachas, repeated twice. It could be that maybe one of them died. He had another child, he named him after the brother who died. Or maybe they're not really all of his children, some are his grandchildren, great-grandchildren, but there was a horrible tragedy where his children went to battle against Gaza and they were killed. And all of the other brothers came to give comfort to Ephraim, and he then married another wife, had a daughter. None of this is mentioned in the Torah. Isn't that amazing? It's totally left out. It's a major, major episode, a major story. We know that Yehuda, he left his brothers, he married Shua, the daughter of Hiram, the daughter of Hiram. We have stories. We have major events.
Have messages.
Right. So why is this? Now, if it's totally not important, completely not important, then it should not be mentioned in Divrei Hayam either. So the question is, why did Ezra, who compiled Divrei Hayam, at least the first nine parakim? By the way, Ezra compiled the first nine parakim, and Nehemiah put together the remainder of Divrei. That is the assumption. That is what most of the commentators tell us. It was put together by Ezra and Nehemiah. Why did Ezra decide to include in Divrei Hayamim this episode of Ephraim, his children, going to battle and dying, and not mentioned in the Torah? So in the back of the art scroll, you know, the art scroll is really a fantastic piece of work. Especially the back, the beginning of the front and the back, they have themes that explain the deeper meaning behind what's going on. He says very simply, I think it's very Eisenstein, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I don't remember exactly, but he explains that Sefer Shemos is a story of redemption, of success. It's an interesting idea. It's success. It is the story of the redemption of Klal Yisrael. It's not relevant what happened. Every story, every event mentioned Chumash Shemos of when they went down to Mitzrayim, what happened there was all part of the process of the Geula. Now, of course, in the process of Geula, there are failures. It's not the focus of Chumash Shemos. What happened to Ephraim was a tragedy, and is what to learn from it, but that's not what Sefer Shemos is all about. It's a Sefer of the Geul of Klal Yisrael. Divrei Hayam, on the other hand, is historical work, pretty much. It's inspiration to go and build the Bayis Shlishi so the Bnei Agola shall come return. But overall, it's an historical account of what happened in the history of Klal Yisrael, and every event, every tragedy, we have what to learn from. There's what to learn from, to take Musar, to guide us in the future. And it's important. It is important. The stories that are presented in Divrei Hayam that are missing in Chumash Shemos, and vice versa, what's presented in Chumash Shemos and it's not present in Divrei Hayam, speaks volumes, and what is the purpose, the function of the particular Sefer. And that's, I think, a very important point to keep in mind. Now, we mentioned again over here that this story with Ephraim, it's not clear exactly when it happened. We mentioned the Medrash that this occurred 30 years before the Geula. According to Rashi, the Medrash that Rashi quotes, the Bnei Ephraim made a calculation. Hashem said that after 400 years, there will be redemption. The truth was, Hashem wanted that number to begin at the birth of Yitzchak, And Yitzchak was born 30 years after Hashem told this news to Avraham Avinu. The Bnei Ephraim decided that the 400 years, the clock starts from the time of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. So when they were in Egypt, it was 30 years before actual Geula, they decided the time is now, and they left prematurely, and they were wiped out on their way into Eretz Yisrael, coming into the land of Gass. And that would indicate that Gass was part of Eretz Yisrael. One of the Canaanite nations was part of Eretz Yisrael. When they came to Eretz Yisrael, they were wiped out because it was premature. Other commentators say a very big chiddush is that there was a colony of Gass in Egypt itself. I told you when we started that Gass simply was some type of a dwelling, some type of place in the desert. And they wanted to expand the boundary of Egypt. They had privileges from Yosef being connected to the government to leave Egypt and go and conquer a little neighborhood in the desert. Others say no, in Egypt itself there was a place called Gass. It could be that Gass was a colony from the Canaanim who lived in Eretz Canaan, who came to Egypt because of the famine, and they set up shop, and there was some type of scuffle between the Bnei Ephraim and these people, their neighbors in the colony called Gass, living in Egypt, and they got into trouble with them, and the people of Gass wiped out, killed all the children of Ephraim, and it was a very great tragedy. So you have really, pretty much, from what I've seen, three approaches. Either they left Egypt, they went to the desert to conquer some location called Gass, or they went into Eretz Yisrael 30 years before the Geula, or within Egypt itself there was a place called Gass. Now there's one other very important point that is mentioned in the back of the art scroll, Divrei Hayamim. Why Ephraim? So he develops this in a very beautiful way. We know that from all the Shvatim, Yosef was a very prominent Shevet. Yosef was significant. Yosef was the one that supported the Mashpe, supported his father. Yaakov gave a gift to Yosef, Shechem, Achad, gave him a double portion. And even before all of this started, he was the Ben Zikunim, and he made from the Ksonis Pasim. And Chazal tell us everything that Yaakov learned in the Beis Medrash of Shem Be'ever, the Mesorah he gave over to Yosef. Yaakov favored Yosef more than all of the other Shvatim. What more do you want? And that's why the Mechira took place. The Ksonis Pasim. The Ksonis Pasim didn't just represent a nice garment, it represented that Yaakov viewed Yosef as his heir. He's the one that's going to carry on the legacy of Klal Yisrael. Even though we know there was a Yehuda, there was a Levi, and we know all the complications of things did not exactly work out the way Yaakov played, but that's the way Yaakov viewed Yosef. Yosef, that is very important, Yosef in turn viewed Ephraim to be his heir. So, basically, Ephraim was the Yaakov Avinu of the generation. It's a very powerful point. You think of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov Avinu. He's the Rosh HaMishpach. Okay, let's go to the next generation. Who is the Rosh HaMishpach of the next generation? Yosef. Yosef, for many reasons. Go now to the next generation. Yosef dies. All of the cousins. Who is the heir? Who is the one that represents the family? Ephraim. Ephraim was the head of the Mishpach, and therefore Ephraim had a certain sensitivity to Geula, more so than the other brothers. And they felt the time, it's Bedavka, specifically Ephraim, that felt the need to return to their roots, to return to Eretz Canaan, to repossess the Holy Land, Eretz Yisrael. That's why their Yetzirah, actually, they demanded to leave early, to leave 30 years before, because they really felt that the time has come. They felt the time has come for the Geula, and indeed they left 30 years prematurely to return to Eretz Yisrael, and they suffered greatly, and they were killed by the Anshei Gass. So we know that in Tanakh, Klal Yisrael is called by Ephraim. It's not just, we think of Ephraim because of Yoram ben Nevat. Yoram ben Nevat, when the Malchus divided between Rechavam and Yeravam, so we have the Malchus Yehuda and the Malchus Yisrael. The Malchus Yisrael is called Ephraim. Why? Because Yeravam came from Shevet Ephraim. That's significant. Why did he come? Why Dafka from Shevet Ephraim was there a person that rose to power and demanded Malchus? Because Ephraim was, to a certain degree, the heir to the legacy of Yaakov Avinu through Yosef. What?
Heir apparent.
Well, not heir apparent, but there was already a Yehuda. Yehuda was already running the show. But there was this stirring of greatness, of Malchus, lying within Yosef, which went over to Ephraim and went down all the way to his descendants hundreds of years later, came to Yeravam. Yeravam did not like the way things were running in Washington. He did not like what was going on in Yerushalayim. So he demanded he's going to break away, make his own Malchus. And in fact, Malchus of Yisrael in Tanakh is called Ephraim. And to such a degree that even Yehuda and Binyamin sometimes are incorporated in the term Ephraim. Ben Yaker Li Ephraim in Yelet Shashum. And the Pasuk there refers to the whole Klal Yisrael by the name of Ephraim. It's not just, oh, because he came from Shevet Ephraim. There's something much deeper. It's because it all goes back to Yaakov. Yaakov favored Yosef. Yosef favored Ephraim. In Ephraim lies, to some degree, the spark of Yaakov Avinu. And that's why we have this son. They felt this demand to leave Egypt 30 years early to return to Eretz Canaan. Something which is hard for us to understand. What's the rush? What's the rush to go? Be careful. Don't take things into your own hands, especially when the rest of Klal Yisrael is not behind you. Remember, Reisman, I once heard him say a fascinating show. He went through history, the whole Jewish history. How many times in history did Klal Yisrael make a mistake? I don't remember the details, in calculations and the Zman Geulah or different events. So one of the examples he cited was Ephraim. Ephraim made the calculation. 400 years have come. It's time to go. You talk about Shabbosai Tzvi in much later time. The people made these calculations. Megillas Esther, the 70 years exactly. He went through many, many examples in history where Klal Yisrael had a very great Nisayon. They made a calculation. The Zman has arrived. It's time to take action, take matters into your own hands, and bring the Geula. And then at the end, he was very frightening what he said. He said, how many years we're soon going to come to the year 6,000, okay? It's 200 something years, 230 years less. Okay, less than 230 years. So, it's scary to say what he said. What's going to happen? Chas v'shalom, Mashiach would not have come by then. And we have a tradition. Mashiach has to come by the year 6,000. Every child is brought up with this. First of all, where does it come from? We don't know where it comes from. It's not so clear what it means. Let's say Lu Yitzui, let's say we were living now at that Kufa, where in 3 years from now, it's going to be the year 6,000. So Mashiach, and let's say Mashiach doesn't come. So what does that mean? So it means we don't necessarily know what 6,000 years mean.
How many 6,000?
Well, I don't know how many.
This is the whole thing about seven, 6,000.
Okay, I don't know. But it's a very great. We have to look back at history. In history, there were many times where individuals and groups of people were absolutely certain that the Zman has arrived.
Well, have you just had that with Lubavitch? They believe that
it's supposed to be 2,000 years.
It was Mashiach.
Well, they didn't depend on time.
Well,
they believed in the person, but I don't think it was dependent on the time.
That he was the separate son from the original rabbi.
Okay, all right. Okay, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the philosophy of Lubavitch.
Go with Yosef's permission.
Yosef wasn't alive. The children of the question were, did the children of Ephraim go with Ephraim's permission? We have here a whole long list of children. Did they leave? They took matters into their own hands, and they went, they left, and decided the gula has come. So, what did Ephraim say? Ephraim was the son of Yosef. Yosef probably told Ephraim when the gula should come, or what the correct calculation is. So why are the children doing something like this against the will of the rest of Klal Yisrael? It was not with them. They felt they were right. They do the calculation. So it's a very great, just because we have in Chazal numbers, and the numbers tell us things are going to happen, it doesn't necessarily mean we understand what the numbers mean, and what the correct calculation is. And there are so many examples in history where we have been taking the numbers and we thought we knew what they meant and we've been shown that we were wrong. So he's just saying that don't get so, go, his idea, don't get so worked up over the number 6,000. It's just a number. It's just a number. And we don't know what it means. Does 6,000 mean from the time when of creation? How, when was creation? I mean, we go to a wedding. We say, you come to a wedding, and it's a hail off him and tav shin ayin gimel leminyan sha'anu moinin kan in Brooklyn, New York. Why do we say leminyan sha'anu moinin kan? It's hail off him tav shin ayin gimel. Period. This is it. There is no other minyan. The answer is, don't get so carried away. Just because we have a convention of Halof and Tavshin Ayin Gimel, that's a convention. That's according to the best of our understanding, that is when Briyas Olam took place. But it could be roughly 1 year. There are different opinions. It was the world started in year zero, this is starting in year one. And when did the Churban take place? And there are lost years. And do we really understand how time worked? In my Sibiratius, we said it was 7 days. There's a lot of scientific opinions on how long did creation take. It took 7 days. What is a day? When the Torah talks about a day, what does it mean? Does it mean a day of 24 hours? Probably. I mean, I don't want to say anything that's kafira, but there, it's not so simple, all of these things. So that's why we always say l'minyan sha'anu moinin kan. And this is just something which is an amazing series of psukim, completely left out in Chumash Shemos. You can barely find reference to this in the Medrash, and here in Divrei Hayamim, it's mamash explicit. Ephraim and all these children, they went to fight Bnei Gas, they all killed, the brothers came to Menachem, he got married again, he named a child after the terrible events. That's serious stuff. And then had another daughter, and from that daughter, came the famous Yehoshua ben Nun. And you learn Chumash, Chamish Chumash Torah, you'll never ever know. You'll never even find it in it. It come out in a Rashi or in a Chazal. Yeah.
That there are no
Midrashim? There are Midrashim, but they're not many.
Ephraim, just doing a couple of quick figures, Ephraim wouldn't have been alive at that time, because if they went out 30 years early, that would be 2418. Ephraim was born in 2231.
So how old would he be?
So he would have had to be, if he were alive at that time, he'd have to be like 180 years old.
Okay, it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not, but he would have to be at least that old.
Yeah, okay, they say that. So according to the Medrash, that's really what it means.
Yeah.
He was. That's not, those days, 180 wasn't like, you say 500's already pushing it.
No,
180.
It's unlikely considering.
Yeah. Look, today people live 100 years old.
Well, they're getting a little older.
So to say that in those times, 180, it's not so far-fetched. Okay, yeah.
Who favored Ephraim? Wasn't it Yaakov who favored him?
No, it was Yosef.
Oh, who was the
Bechor? The Bechor was Menashe, ki Menashe ha-Bechor. Sikel es
Yodov.
Excellent, right.
Who told him not to? Yosef.
Yosef, right. Right, correct.
What?
Okay, that's right. But even put that aside. Put aside the fact that Yaakov told Yosef to put the right hand. Yaakov crisscrossed his hands. Put that aside. We know that Menashe was as acting in the role of, in government. Where Ephraim, Chazal tell us, sat and learned and studied Torah the entire day, all of his time, by Yosef. So it appears that Yosef transmitted to Ephraim, even before the mice of Sikel es Yadav, transmitted the spiritual legacy of Klal Yisrael over to Ephraim. And Menashe was running state affairs. I don't know, maybe not. Yosef was both. Yosef had both. He had the Messer from Yaakov, and he also was the viceroy. It seems that his two sons, the Skanu Hadoros, he had to divide those roles between his two sons, between Ephraim and Menashe. Okay, so these are different ideas. Yeah.
Something, when we're talking about it, it says that they went down Yardu.
Yeah.
So if they would have gone, if they went get out of Mitzrayim, they would have gone to the east or some other direction. Yardu, we'd be going down in Africa. Wouldn't it be?
No. Yardu is a general expression of descending to a land that's spiritually low. Egypt was known to be the lowest moral standards of the world. It was called the Ervas Haaretz.
And they went for cattle and everything.
They went for famine. So it was a famine. There was a famine in Canaan. They went for sustenance. They went for sustenance. There was a famine. There was a drought.
Well, what about the numbers for Ephraim? The numbers when they
yes,
that's right.
So they were 8,000. So the Radak says the numbers. The Radak says that they dropped by 8,000. They went from, I don't know, the Radak has numbers that when they left, they came down. I don't know the exact numbers, but when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, they were 8,000 less than they were when they were in the desert. And the question is, what happened? How come their numbers went down from the time they left, they were in the desert, until the time they came into Eretz, or they were in Egypt? I don't know the exact numbers. There was a discrepancy. And the discrepancy the Radak explains is these B'nai Gas, that these children, with their children and grandchildren and all their followers, they went to war against Gas. They attempted to conquer Eretz Yisrael prematurely and they were killed. And that's why there's a discrepancy of 8,000 from two different points in time, calculation of how many people were in Shevet Ephraim. Okay, so this concludes Shevet Ephraim. I wanted to do Menashe to Asher, but maybe we'll stop now. We'll stop now. And now we're going to have the privilege and the zchus of a Siyum Shleishim for the mother of Rabbi Mayevsky. Yeah.